Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Let's Bark About It Tampa Bay. Lori Elmer here. My co-host Nikki Knowlton and I are thrilled to share some exciting news about Urban Dog Studio. We're still in the same studios at 5663 building, but now, as owners, we've expanded into an amazing larger space. We're busy working long hours, adding all the special touches to our beautiful boutique studio. It's a lot of work, but we can't wait for you all to see it. While we're putting the finishing touches on our new studio, we thought it'd be the perfect time to bring back some of our very best early episodes. We know many of our new listeners haven't had a chance to hear these gems yet. The content is terrific and definitely worth resharing. So sit back, relax, and enjoy these classic episodes of Let's Bark About It Tampa Bay. And don't forget, we'll be back soon with fresh new episodes and a fabulous new studio space to share with you all. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for some great content coming your way. Welcome to episode number 25 of Let's Bark About It Tampa Bay. Lori Elmer here with my co-host Nikki Knowlton. We're the owners and photographers of Urban Dog Studio, Tampa Bay's premier pet photography studio. Today, we're truly honored to introduce our special guest. He's the human half of an extraordinary canine partnership within the Pinellas Park Police Department. Just last week, we had the entire canine unit in our studio for portraits, and seeing these partnerships in action was an absolute thrill. And of course, we love working with these remarkable four-legged crime fighters. Be sure to check out the show notes on our website at urbandogstudio.com under the podcast tab. If you go there, you'll be able to see some of the portraits we created. Y'all ready? Let's get started.
Are you a dog owner who only wants the best for your furry family member? Looking for expert information on topics ranging from how to keep your dog safe and healthy to where to go for the best pup cups in Tampa Bay? If so, you're in the right place. Welcome to your resource for news and information to help your dogs live their best life. And now, your hosts, pet photographers, owners of Urban Dog Studio, pet industry insiders, and doting dog moms, Lori Elmer and Nikki Knowlton. Are you ready? Sit, stay. Let's bark about it, Tampa Bay.
Hello, dog-loving friends. Today, we get to learn all about the world of canine policing, from intense training to critical teamwork in the field. Corporate Wes Duchini is here to share firsthand experiences and shed light on what it truly means to be part of the canine unit.
We can't wait to learn all about the unique bond between canine officer and their four-legged partner, exploring the challenges they face and the triumphs they celebrate together. Corporal Duchini, thank you so much for joining us today. Please start by telling us a little bit about you and your journey to becoming part of the canine unit.
Okay. My name's Corporal Wes Duchini. I work for the Pinellas Park Police Department, and I am a corporal in the canine unit. I've been with the Pinellas Park Police Department for 10 and a half years now, and I have been in canine for just about 2.5 years. So, prior to getting into canine, I was in patrol for 6 years, and then I did 2 years with a unit that we stood up called our Strategic Enforcement Team. And then throughout my whole career, I had always wanted to be in canine. And finally, the opportunity came, and I tried out, and here I am.
Oh, so it's a tryout process. You have to apply, and then
it's a tryout. It's a pretty strenuous tryout. Our tryouts are actually about 12 hours long, and that consists of a physical fitness test, consists of a written test, an oral board, and several practical scenarios where you're basically evaluated on your decision-making, your judgment, and basically your just knowledge of the dog and how you interact with the dogs. So it's just an evaluation to see if you would be a good fit and have the aptitude for being a canine handler.
Wow. Okay. So it's not as easy as, hey, I want to work in the canine unit. I like dogs.
Not in Pinellas County. Most agencies in Pinellas County, there's a pretty high demand for this position. So, which is a good thing, right? Because you really get, you get the best candidates that way. But pretty much throughout the county, whichever agency you're looking at, they always have several people trying out each time they have an opening. And so they really put you through the rigmarole to make sure they're getting quality people in there.
And what was it about being a canine officer that attracted you? You said you'd always wanted to be one. So what was it that sort of attracted you to that role?
When I was in the academy, actually the Pinellas Park canine unit at the time came in and did a demonstration for our academy class. And I saw how squared away those handlers were. They were super sharp. The dogs were super sharp. You could tell that they were kind of the tip of the spear guys. And and I just saw them do their thing that day. And I was like, man, that's awesome. That's what I want to do. And once I started working, and I was working with those guys on real calls on patrol, you saw how much fun they were having. And you also saw that what they were doing was very rewarding. You know, they were out catching bad guys. They were working with a dog, which I don't know that there's anything better in the world to do than that.
We agree.
Yeah. So they were really doing all the things that I wanted to do, and they really kind of set a good example. And that's kind of how I fell into it. I became close friends with the guys that were in the unit at the time, and I would run with them on deployment tracks when they were out chasing bad guys, and you know, just as a backup. And I had helped them do some training sometimes, and I just really had a lot of fun with it and fell in love with the craft.
Amazing. Awesome. So go ahead, Nikki.
Oh, maybe we have the same question. So you've been on the canine unit for 2 years. Has it always been the same canine officer, or have you, is this your first one, and or you want another? Like, how does that work?
So we have three dogs in our unit, and they've changed throughout the years. You know, guys will move on. They'll want to leave the unit to get promoted, leave the unit maybe because a different schedule would be better for their family life, or they're moving on in their career somehow. So that's how positions become available. We usually work our dogs for about 6 years. We get our dogs when they're about a year old, and we work them until they're about seven. And depending on the dog's health, but we don't really want to work them too much longer than that, because we want the dog to have a good retirement. So when the handlers before me, when either their dogs retired or they were ready to move on to a different position within the agency, they had the choice of either getting another dog or moving on. And eventually, the guy whose spot that I took, he moved on to bigger and better things, and spot came available, and that's how our tryout came to be when I got in. Now, since then, we've had two more tryouts, because the other two guys in the unit at the time when I came in, they've also moved on, gotten promoted, and gone to other positions in the agency. So it's a high demand job, and it's not a job that a lot of people like to leave. However, it does take a toll on your body, and and there does come a time when it's time to move on.
Right. And so when someone gets promoted, if their dog is, like, say, 3 years in, and somebody is taking their place, so does that dog then move to the new human part of the team, or how does that work?
Usually, that's actually never happened. Really, it goes in front of city council, and anytime somebody leaves the unit, city council makes the decision: are we going to let that handler keep the dog, or are we going to reassign the dog? But we've never reassigned the dog. The city council has always been very accommodating and willing to let that handler keep the dog, because the dog's become part of the family, you know?
Right. I would never get promoted. I'd be like, sorry, I can't go. Yeah. I can't
be promoted until my dog's ready to retire.
that scenario doesn't happen very often, because most guys want to work their dogs, you know, and the dogs deserve to have a good career, because they've gone through so much training and they've done everything we've asked them to do. So we want to reward them by providing them a good career. So that doesn't happen often, but you know, in the rare occasions, everybody's been able to keep the dog.
So when the dog retires, does it get to stay with its handler, or does it, the dog retires before you do, does he stay with you and you get a new buddy?
Yep, absolutely.
Now you have two.
Yeah. So, again, it goes, because the dog is owned by the city of Pinellas Park, it goes in front of city council, and they've always basically given the dog to the handler. Okay. So when the dog retires, the dog stays home with the family, and they become a house pet.
Mm-hmm. Big lap dog.
Yeah, big lap dog.
And you know, city council, they all seem to be dog lovers. They're great people. We were just there last night. So.
Yeah, they are. They're really good people. They've always
we're gonna
been
say
really
nothing but nice because they are.
Yeah.
So and I would imagine too, if you've got a dog that's now retired or is no longer in the field and is now just a house pet, and you bring in a new dog, that retired dog is probably, I mean, do they function as a mentor at all? I mean, certainly I would think that would probably help that dog move into, you know, fit into family life.
It's all very dependent. These dogs are very alpha dogs. So that transition needs to be taken slowly and gradually, because I would say that probably most police dogs don't interact with each other well, not right off the bat anyway. So it's a progression. Like my house dog and Kojak, my police canine, they're best friends. But it took 6 months to get to there. You know, I didn't just let them go play right away because I didn't know how aggressive he would be to her, or if she thought that because the house was hers all along, that if she was going to be dominant. So when you bring in a new male dog, there's a balancing act to try and figure out if they're going to get along with each other well, and then how to introduce them gradually so that there's no conflict.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, and the dog that you already had in your home, was that just a family pet, or was that also, was that a retired canine?
No, she's a family pet. She's a chocolate lab.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So same size, at least. It wasn't like a miniature poodle bossing around it.
They're actually, Kojak weigh almost the exact same. They weigh 72 pounds. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, but it's funny how much more dominant he is over her. He's just stronger and faster and just a lot more physical. And they wrestle and roll around and roughhouse all the time. But they're the same weight, but he could be a little rough sometimes, but she takes it in stride. She loves it.
Well, that's a good thing with labs. They don't really mind a little rough and tumble. They just think it's great.
They're just happy.
Right.
So yeah, that's it.
She's happy. She doesn't have to go to work. She gets to stay home.
Well, and I would imagine the dogs that are being brought into a canine unit are probably dogs that are being selected specifically because they're very confident dogs. You can't have a dog that's not confident in the field. So, which gets me, I don't know if you guys are still, I know for you had German Shepherds then for a while, Malinois, mm-hmm. and then I think you're doing German Shepherds again, or it's gone back and forth a little bit. Tell us about Kojak's history. Where does Kojak come from and all that fun stuff?
Yeah. So Kojak is, he's actually a German Shepherd, Dutch Shepherd mix. He comes from Hungary. And there's several vendors throughout the state that go over to Europe. They pick dogs. They bring the dogs back over here. And then we go and we select dogs from there. It's basically we go to their facility and we do a tryout with the dogs. So on the day we went and got Kojak, there were several other dogs there, and we do a tryout and run them through a series of tests. And we don't necessarily pick a German Shepherd or a Dutch Shepherd or a Mal. We don't go there with the intention of picking one specific breed. We go there and we pick the best dog that they have. And if they have a dog that doesn't quite meet our criteria, then we'll go to a different vendor and we'll mm-hmm. continue to do that until we find a dog that meets our criteria and we think is going to basically be the right fit for our unit.
Okay. And so these dogs have already gone through some training. They've already had some behavioral assessments and all of that, or like how old are they at this point? Like, how do you know? Because sometimes you don't know, a 4 month old dog isn't necessarily going to be the same, you know, 6 months down the road.
Yeah. So, each vendor they might do some training with them. I wouldn't say that they do any obedience, but they might do some environmental work with them. And they might use like a tug or a sleeve or something like that to kind of get them interested to evaluate their bite work and their confidence. So it really depends on what type of exposures they've had. But generally, the dogs will be between 9 months and 15 months when we go and we look at them. And we want a dog that's usually right about the 12-month mark. Because any younger than that, the dog is a little rambunctious.
Wants to play.
Right, wants to play a lot and isn't quite ready to be in that training environment. That's as regimented as it is.
Okay.
So when you get a dog that's 12 or 15 months old, they've calmed down a little bit and they're a little bit easier to control and to communicate with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when they come from the vendor, let's say you go to the vendor, you pick out Kojak. Does Kojak then go to your house or do they go to a canine police trainer and lives there and learns how to do everything that the canine units do?
Yeah. So
you teach them that.
Yeah. No, we teach them everything. So Kojak comes home with us. Usually he'll stay in the kennels at the police department for a few days while we get them medically checked out and get them vetted. We have to have their teeth x-rayed and their hips x-rayed and they get a very thorough exam done. And once they vet out, then they'll come home with us. If we have our home ready for them, and the agency they've built us an outdoor kennel. They give us a crate for inside and so they give us all that stuff, but sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get that stuff built around the house and set up. And the dog will hang out at the PD kennels until that happens. And then we go to school. And while we're in school, school's 16 weeks long. And it's 4 days a week, 10 hours a day. And
10 hours a day?
Yeah. Yeah.
In school with the canine officer 10 hours a day?
Yep.
Or you are?
Yep. Kojak and I go to school together.
Okay.
And we learn everything together. I learn how to be a handler and how to communicate with him. And we do all the training together from square one.
Okay. So that's a bond. That's quite the bond that you're building right there.
Yeah. And that's kind of why we do it, right? Because not only are we wanting to bond with the dog and kind of go through those trials and tribulations and learning experiences together, but it's very important that as a handler, I learn how to teach the dog and how to become a handler. And basically you're becoming a dog trainer. And you learn that all in school while you're teaching your dog to be a police canine.
And, wow. And I think things may have changed, but years ago, I actually did a photo shoot with the Pinellas Park canine unit.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And we did. It was at one of the places where you all would take them to, run them through their paces. So
right.
they were doing scent work and they were doing also attack work. Your dog, does it also do scent work or is it just your partner
guy.
For chasing the bad guy or?
Yeah. So he does everything.
Okay.
In patrol school, like I said, it's 16 weeks long. And in patrol school, you learn obedience, how to do obedience. You learn how to do tracking, man tracking, which is our bread and butter. You learn how to do building searches and area searches and apprehensions. And we do work out in the water. We do work in vehicles, all those kind of things that we might encounter in a patrol scenario is what we learn in basic canine school. And then about 3 months ago, Canine Kojak and I went to detector school. And detector school is where you learn how to either do detection for narcotics or explosives.
And oh, I got excited. I was like, oh, he's a detective. He's going to solve crimes. Yeah.
Well, he does. He's the catalyst for that, right? So when we deploy him to search a vehicle for narcotics, he's sometimes the tip of the spear for getting into vehicles and beginning that investigation into what would be a narcotics investigation. So in a big sense, he is a detective. So a lot of the times, if I don't remember what the TV show or the cartoon was, but you know, the inspector where he's looking through a little magnifying glass.
Yeah. Oh, Inspector Gadget.
And that's kind of what we're doing when we're tracking bad guys too. You know, you put your dog on task and he's using his nose to follow the trail of where the bad guy went. So they are in a lot of ways a detective.
Okay. So with detecting certain scents, doing that scent work, do they do the scent work on their own I guess what I'm asking is, I know that you can tell them, go sniff this mm-hmm. and tell me if there's something, but if you're just standing there and you haven't told them to do it, will they do it on their own and say, hey, you didn't ask me, but there's something over here?
I have not experienced that.
Okay.
I can't speak for everybody. I'm sure that that's possible, but really, we focus a lot on having the dog be task oriented.
Okay.
And so, if he's out and he's not on task, if he's free to roam about, he's going to be free to roam about and not worry about going to work.
Okay.
But if he's on task, even if we get out of the vehicle and we're walking from point A to point B and I put him in a heel, his task at that point is to be in a heel. It's not to search for drugs or search okay. for that. So a good example of that is we don't use the stay command. And the reason being is because if I put my dog in a down, then I shouldn't have to tell him to stay. He should maintain that down until he's given another command to do something else. So we don't use the stay command just because I can tell him to down or I can tell him to sit. And in theory, I should be able to do a lap around the city, come back, and he'd be in the same position. So their task is whatever the last command is that was given to them.
Okay.
And then I've noticed that their big reward always seems to be that baton. Or it's a
Look very exciting to me. I watched it. I was watching a couple years ago. We had some canine units in the studio for fun, and the reward was just not exciting. Like, why does that dog like that nondescript
right.
toy?
It doesn't squeak. It doesn't do
right. anything. And the dog, you would think it is full of bacon.
Yeah.
And the dog is like, loves it.
So that's it's a tug, and it's basically just a soft 12 inch.
It's like a beanbag.
I got one in my pocket here, but it's kind of just a tough material that they can't chew very well. But you got to make it fun, and so you can make anything fun, and we do that by what we call playing the game, which is almost kind of like a little keep away. We use that to play fetch with them. We use that to play tug of war with them. And as long as you make it fun and they think that it's fun, then you can make any object fun. A good example is recently one of our dogs in the unit was having difficulty locating hard items. So if we went out to a field and did an article search or an evidence search, and we used brass knuckles or a wrench or a screwdriver or something like that, he wasn't very keen on fetching up those metal objects. So what we had to do is we just had to go make those things fun again. So we just took those objects and we played the game with those objects. We played keep away. And when you play keep away, now he wants it, you know? So, and then we would play fetch with him and you just make those things fun. And if you make anything fun, the dog will think of that item as a reward.
It's fun, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we use a pug because it fits in our pocket. It's soft, so they do get to bite on it pretty good. And we can play tug of war and we can play fetch with it. So it's a good overall tool.
Is that their only toy? Does he have a basket at home full of balls?
No. So he really only plays with the only toys that we really play with on a regular basis would be the tug. I have a rubber ball on a rope that I can chuck really far. And then I have a rubber pole that's not on a rope that we'll play with too. But I do have a bin in the back of my cruiser full of all sorts of different articles. And those are articles that we use for training, for doing article searches, evidence searches, things like that. And they're also items that we'll lay along a track when we're doing our training tracks. And they're almost kind of like little Easter eggs or little rewards mm-hmm. along the track that he'll find. He'll alert to it and he gets to play with it. Sometimes I'll let him shred it because he has fun doing that. And sometimes I'll just, you know, play tug with him or whatever. But we use all sorts of different items from credit cards, wallets, belts, shoes, sunglasses, hats, anything that, okay. that a suspect might.
All the things that Ginger, I have to say, Ginger, I think, should have been a canine unit because when she was a puppy, I found the craziest things in her bed. And she's a little multi, who knows what she is, but she's like, 9 pounds?
She's not taking down any bad guys.
She's not, well, I don't know, she could.
Maybe.
I tried to build something with IKEA once, and she stole the Allen wrench and the screws and all sorts of stuff. So basically the canine unit gets to play with all the things the other dogs don't get to play with on the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
That's special.
I will say though, when I bring him in the house, which is kind of rare, when I bring him in the house, he's great in the house. He doesn't mess with anything in the house. He doesn't mess with all the kids' toys that are strewn about the floor. He's pretty good, but
so that's what I was going to ask. If he's inside and you've left your belt on the floor, I mean, that's one of the things that's in his little goodie bag in the right. in the cruiser.
He sings for the belt. Ooh, it's a like, wallet.
It's like, oh, dad left me some Easter eggs here. I get to play with them. So
yeah, now it's a little bit regimented at home. He has an outdoor kennel that he's in most of the time, and I keep him in the garage. Usually overnight, and he's got a nice fan out there, and we have like an air conditioner unit set up in the garage for him and stuff. But they're outside most of the time because we kind of want work to be boring home to be boring and then work to be fun. So we don't really do any training at home. We don't do any work at home. I do have a pool that he does swim in quite often. And, especially right now, it's so hot outside. If I'm going to put him in his kennel, I might let him jump in the pool and get wet, and then I'll put him in his kennel. But his kennel's outside in the shade, and it's covered, and he's got a big fan out there too. But it's important to keep the dogs outside the majority of the time because we want them to be acclimated to the weather. Because when we're at work and we're tracking bad guys, out in the heat, and even at 2 o'clock in the morning right now, it's 85 degrees and 80% humidity, you know?
Right.
So the more that we can keep the dogs outside and acclimated to the current weather conditions, the more useful they're going to be when they're out on the road.
And I would imagine they probably wear out pretty well during a shift. So when they're off, they probably are just wanting to sleep, I would imagine. I mean, because dogs, they sleep a lot, and and when they're with you riding in the car or going on calls and everything, they're probably getting a lot of exercise.
Yeah, it depends on the night. Sometimes some nights are pretty busy. It's call to call. And then some nights are kind of slower. And he loves going to work. That's their favorite thing in the world to do. For one, because he's an air-conditioned car all night, except when we're out working. But when we get out, then we're working. He's on task, and that's where he's in his element, and he's having the most fun. So he doesn't know the difference between getting out of the car to do training and getting out of the car on a real deployment. So he thinks everything that we do is a game. He's always working for his toy, basically. Even if we're chasing a bad guy, he doesn't know we're chasing a bad guy because this person committed a crime. He thinks we're chasing the bad guy because he's trying to find his toy, and he thinks the bad guy has whatever it is that coach wants.
Right. It's part of his game. Yeah. It's the game.
It's just part of the game. Yeah. He doesn't know that a robbery suspect's a robbery suspect or a battery suspect's a battery suspect. He just wants to go find his toy. Wants his toy and wants that reward at the end.
Tell you what, I'm never going to be a bad guy because I don't want him to think I have his toy.
So how does, what is the interaction between Kojak and your family members?
It's really good. And again, this is for us specifically, I know that not every dog is, or every police canine is good with children or families and stuff. But Kojak's fantastic. He's integrated very well with my family. I have a son that'll be 2 next month. And just before we came in here, my son and Kojak were playing fetch out in the yard. So
awesome.
That's so nice to hear.
Yeah. So yeah. Kojak's really good with the family. He's very gentle when he needs to be.
Cool. And I know, because I've seen you guys doing, different, demonstrations. Recently you all were at actually my husband's office for their anniversary at Pinellas Animal Hospital and
doing
demonstrations, and all the dogs were interacting with the public and they were just fabulous. So they're just, you know, they're very approachable. And I don't know if you have to like tell them it's okay. They can relax. I don't know. Like, cause they were like super amped up because they were chasing a fake bad guy. They were taking him down, and like 2 seconds later, they're working the crowd. So like, how do you help them shift gears, or do you even need to help them shift gears? So they're just cool with that.
Well, like I said, the dogs, are task oriented. So if the task is to do bite work or apprehension work, then the dogs are going to be in a little bit different of a mindset. But if there's no stimulus out there, and they're not on task to do, one of their normal patrol jobs, then they're just like our dogs in our unit anyway. They're just regular dogs, you know, and you can go up and you can pet them and interact with them and stuff like that. And if they're not on task to do something else, then they're just free to be a dog.
Happy to see you.
Yeah. Free to be a dog.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just impressed that they were able to, I mean, these dogs were like, you could just tell they were waiting for you to tell them that it was okay to chase. Like they're just like, they were like almost shaking with anticipation to go and chase. They go and chase. They wrestle that poor guy in that hot suit. I don't know who that was, what officer it was, but you know, these dogs are working. It was a hot day. And I mean, they were out there, they were doing their thing and they were just so excited and they were ready to go again. And, and then they were just walking around all the kids in the crowd, just acting like normal dogs. I'm like, that was really amazing to me that they could do that. And
switch,
I mean, you
explained
it well. It's still, to me, it's still sort of magic that they can do that, because people can't, you know, it takes people more time to calm down than
we take a lot of pride in, we could be doing bite work and that guy in the bite suit, you know, the dog could be on him and do an apprehension work. And then you give that dog the command to sit. That guy in that bite suit, he can pet the dog. He can roll around on the ground with the dog, and the dog knows that he's not allowed to engage until his handler tells him that he can. So, and they're very good at that. And so if the dog hasn't been told to engage or told to do something, anything really, then he's just free to be played with.
That is just
they
awesome.
Only listen to their handler, right? Or is there a password?
It depends. And a lot of the things that I'm saying are I can only speak for my dog and my unit. You know, I know that these things may be different in other canine units. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say just go up to any police canine and pet them.
Never. But, not even yours. No.
But sorry, repeat the question again.
Do you remember your question, Nikki?
I had unmuted myself. I'm so sorry. The idea of approaching a canine unit just got like, nope.
Yeah.
And every thought just flew out.
Yeah. So,
it was a password. The question was, in general, I guess they listen to only their handler. So you can't just walk up.
Like Kojak will really only listen to me. But the other dogs in our unit, they will listen to their handlers and they'll listen to me or another handler.
So it's the handlers.
Okay. They'll listen to the handlers. And if you give them the commands and the right pitch and tone and the way that they understand the commands, then they'll be obedient and they'll listen. But generally, like if we're out and the dog's on task, the dog's not going to listen to anybody else.
Okay.
But But if we are, if you're just playing with the dog and the dog's just being free or whatever, he may or may not listen to you. It all depends.
Well, and you all train together as a group too, right? You're not always just training alone. So
every Wednesday night, like tonight is our training night, and we have one day a week dedicated strictly to training. And so for all 10 hours tonight, me and the other two dogs in our unit, we all work on Wednesday nights, and we spend 10 hours dedicated training. And then the other nights of the week that we're at work, we do some sort of training every single night, and usually a few times a night. We'll get out, we'll do some obedience, we'll do some agility, some conditioning work, and we try to do a training track a night. And if I don't do a training track that particular night, that I want to do something like an article search or an evidence search that where the dog's focused on searching for and locating something that's containing human odor. So we're always, every single night we'll do a couple things. If we're not out on a deployment or doing something like that, 2, 3, 4 times a night, we'll get out to do something. And sometimes that something is just going for a walk and letting the dog be free and be a dog and sniff and search and mark and doing whatever it is he's going to do. So the dogs get exposure to all the different environments within the city. We do training in every single environment in the city so that when we get out and we go to work, there's no environment that's new to them. Mm-hmm. And they're just comfortable everywhere. So they really have a lot of fun when they're.
Wow. So share with us an example of a typical, probably hard to have a typical evening.
I don't think you can have a typical police night.
Share with us a memorable success story where Kojak helped you catch a bad guy.
Okay. There's several, but a week ago, we got a call that there was a domestic battery taking place. And so we responded to the scene. We made contact with the female victim. She was visibly upset and had some injuries. And she said that her significant other, who had battered her, had taken off eastbound on 118th Avenue. So I got Kojak out. We were actually super busy that night. So we didn't have very many units for a perimeter. And a perimeter is basically how we catch these people. Having a bunch of officers set up a perimeter and swarm an area and get that person to bed down. And if that person beds down and feels like they need to hide or they'll get caught, that's how we get our catches. This particular night, we were just very busy. We didn't have extra officers for a perimeter, but I got Kojak out. I put him on task. He picked up the scent trail very quickly, and you recognize that through the change in behavior of the dog and his pace and his breathing. And he just started hauling butt on the sidewalk, and it was a complete hard surface track. There's no grass or dirt or anything. It was all on the sidewalk. And he pulled me a couple hundred yards down the sidewalk, pulled me up to a business. And we located the suspect hiding behind a set of stairs.
Wow.
So it was, and that was a week or two ago.
He leashed, or do you take the leash off and say, go?
We do everything on lead.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we track on lead there. I know that there are some agencies throughout the country that specifically in the Pacific Northwest that track off lead, mm-hmm. but we do not do that. We track, I use a 15-foot lead.
Okay.
And it's all done on lead.
Yeah. I mean, we all know, you can tell people all day, every day, how sensitive dogs' noses are but it's still amazing. It's still magic that they're able to pick up a scent, especially like you said, on a hard surface like that. Yeah. And I would imagine as a suspect, if I see that dog turning the corner, like, I'm not fighting. It's like, you win. I'm not going to, But
you would think that
a train I'm waiting for you to come rescue me.
yeah, you would think that, and most of the times that is the case. But sometimes folks think that they can beat the dog, and that never works out.
Well, you're only 15 feet behind that dog on the lead, so they've got to beat the dog and the dog's handler, who's going to probably. You know, you're not going to let somebody hurt your dog if you have any power to prevent it. So,
no, but if I need to send the dog on somebody, I drop the leash and I let him go. He'll be a little fur missile and he'll go catch that person.
Right.
And that's happened a number of times too. So,
yeah. Okay. Wow. I feel like we could sit here and ask you questions about Kojak for another 2 or 3 hours, but maybe we'll save that for a follow-up episode.
Yeah.
Sure.
I didn't even realize all the questions that I had. So
I know I never even looked at my list of backup questions.
I know, either am I. I'm like, I hope we covered everything but yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show, and more importantly, appreciate what you all do. You know, for the community, and the dogs not only help keep people safer, but you guys are great about supporting the community and you know, going out and educating the community. And it's so nice when you've got the dogs with you, because I really feel like that's a great social catalyst for you guys. Mm-hmm. It sort of breaks down that barrier. And so I love that you guys do that. And anyway, just thank you so much for coming on the show. Can't wait to see you and Kojak out and about.
Yeah, for sure.
So again, thanks so much. And tell the entire canine unit and the police department how much we appreciate what they do.
Yes,
I will. And we appreciate your support. And if you guys or any of your listeners see us out and about, feel free to come up and talk to us. And we'd be glad to let you check out the dogs and pet the dogs or answer any questions that anybody might have.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever petted an actual canine. I mean, I've obviously met a canine officer, but I am that person that just kind of stands back and says, no, thank you. Maybe if I see you about, I might come up and ask.
You will see them in the studio before long. Nikki.
Oh yeah. They're coming in.
That's okay, right.
Maybe we can help me get over hurdle.
Nikki has a little bit of a German Shepherd.
I have a German Shepherd thing. Version.
A little bit. I mean,
from experience, when I was a child, I don't hold it against German Shepherds or Malinois or any of that breed. Mm-hmm. There was something that happened when I was little. And so it's a nervous thing that I can't control. If there's one that comes up, my entire system is like, nope.
Get away. But you assist with shepherds all the time in the studio, and you've done just fine.
It's something that I have to, like, okay, this dog is okay. I have to talk myself through it. I think, know that they can sense that, especially police dog. But I've worked in clinics, and I've worked at a shelter, and I have worked with German shepherds, but it still takes me a minute.
I think we have two of our three dogs that could help you get over that barrier. Kojak and Canine Maverick, who his handler is Officer Williams. And Canine Maverick could probably be an emotional support dog. He's such a sweetheart. We actually call him the gentleman, because he's just such a calm and well-behaved dog. And one thing that we always say is, be nice until it's time not to be nice, you know. Yeah. take that line from Roadhouse. But Cam's dog Maverick is such a sweetheart and a gentleman. He could probably, he'll help you over that hurdle without a problem.
So I'm up to the challenge. I'm sweating thinking about it.
And I've met Maverick, and that's exactly what he is. He's just a great dog. So yeah,
he is. He is.
Awesome. All right. Well, we have a goal. We'll get Nikki over her her German Shepherd.
I still like them. I just want everybody to know that's her height that may listen. That I still
her
like
over
them.
Over heightened respect for German Shepherds.
I have a very high. Put me with a cane corso that's bigger than me and actually is scary, and it could, you know, and I'm, you know, hand down its throat grabbing a ball. That's big deal. What else? Pit bulls don't scare me. Big giant dogs. It's just the German Shepherds.
Well, yeah.
And Maltese. Maltese are biters. I'm just teasing all you Maltese people. I have friends with Maltese. So that's
we'll get you interacted with some of our dogs and see if we can sway a little bit.
There we go. There we go. Well, once again, thank you so much for joining us. And we can't wait to meet Kojak in person here soon. And we'll talk to you then.
Thanks.
Awesome.
Bye.
Awesome. We'll see you guys soon.
Thanks. Bye. And that wraps up our conversation with Corporal Duchaney from the Pinellas Park Police Department's K-9 unit. We love learning more about how these amazing dogs spend both their working hours and their downtime. How awesome is it that these highly trained dogs actually love what they're doing? They think of it as a team sport they get to play with their human partner every single day. Wow, I know a lot of people who wish they could say that. Thank you again, Corporal Duchaney, for giving us a behind-the-scenes look at the life of these amazing dogs and the bond they share with their human counterparts. I'm in awe, and I'm sure our listeners are too. Don't forget to check out the photos of the K-9 unit posted on our website at urbandogstudio.com under the podcast tab. Look for episode number 25. We had so much fun making both serious portraits and some showing them just being dogs. You'll want to check it out. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Let's Bark About It Tampa Bay. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to leave a review. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on our upcoming episodes. Be sure to visit our website at www.urbandogstudio.com for show notes and links to resources discussed in this episode. Thanks for being a part of this dog-loving community. Now go give your dog a cookie, a belly rub, and say hi from us.